Play fake. Beathard sets up deep in the pocket. Goes down the field for Smith. Ah, he shot it! Smith! Touchdown, 85 yards, Iowa!
56-yarder. Does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Don't miss a thing from the world of college football. Stay right here for College Gridiron on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into the studio here on a beautiful Friday evening now, not afternoon. I was really all geared up to go beautiful Friday afternoon, but then it's evening and I can't do that. We're here to, you know, talk a little bit about week two in our third week of college football. I hate how they do that. Week zero is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. Anyways, how are we doing here with... Oh, I'm Barrett Spreitzer. We're here with Tucker Austin and Isabella Terracini. How are y'all doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited for the weekend. I've got a lot more football to watch, a lot more soccer to cover and football to cover. It's going to be a great weekend, and, you know, here we are.
I feel like the college football season is already moving fast. True. And, like, you mentioned the whole week zero thing. Like, we're kind of in week three already, even though it's only week two. And I feel like week one just started. Like, how are we already moving into another slate of games? But there are some really good games this weekend. There's also good NFL this weekend. The NFL is finally back. But
who cares?
Of course, this is the college football. This is the college gridiron. We don't care about professional sports here. We're here for college football.
I will say the only thing I really love about week zero is the fact that we got to prove that we'll prove that this weekend, but that Florida State are complete frauds. Week one took us 1 week to prove that they do not belong anywhere in the conversation. Last year, we should have been national champions, whatever. We went undefeated. We got blown out by the SEC, but that doesn't matter. We're still the best team in the country. No, you're not.
Don't talk the talk if you can't walk
Mike
the
Norvell,
walk.
Mike Norvell, you're terrible. Get it together. Get your stuff together. Who cares? But anyways, before we get into this week's slate, let's talk a little bit about last week. Maybe some players who stood out. Maybe some takes that we thought we had last week that aged especially well. I don't know if anyone wants to recognize my take or if I'm going to have to say it myself. Tucker, you want to give me my flowers or am I going to have to do it myself?
I'll recognize the take. Shout out Barrett Spreitzer, our wonderful host today, for calling that Georgia-Clemson game pretty much on the money. He said before that game on the show last week that Georgia was going to win by 30 and they went on to win by 31.
Exactly.
So incredible, clip, incredible pick.
So I would like to say I'm pretty awesome. I will ignore the fact that I did go on right. One-on-one the next day and recant that a little bit and said 17. 30, that's what you heard here. So don't go listen to that one-on-one. That it's in the past. One-on-one's live. Completely ignore the fact that you can go re-listen to that. College Gridiron, go listen to that. Hear me say 30 points. That's what really matters. Horrible game, honestly. I mean, just a terrible game. We're not even going to talk about that. Another game we will talk about, though, maybe the best, one of the better, I'll say the best week one game in a while. Notre Dame versus A&M. Before we talk about the nitty-gritty, I want to talk about the ranking real quick. How does Clemson just get boat raced by Georgia and stay in, but then A&M faces the best defense in the country by far and away, and they drop out? I don't even understand how that's possible. Tucker, can you watch that game and say that A&M isn't a top 25 team? They came in at 20, played this number 17.
Offensively,
team in the
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
We
offensively.
We ran the ball very well against the best team, the best defense in the country. Will you disagree with that?
I can't say I disagree with that, but no, running the ball is not everything.
A&M
is not Georgia Tech.
Did A&M's defense stop Notre Dame?
A&M's defense was very good the whole game. I will say that. A&M's defense, I feel really bad for A&M's defense, actually, and I was feeling bad for them during the game.
True.
Just because of the quarterback play was just atrocious.
The scoreline was misleading, I'll say. The defenses, both defenses played incredible. A&M dominated on both lines of scrimmage. I don't think you can disagree with that. A&M's offensive line, which has been for probably the last 3 years a complete liability, looked very good on Saturday. The defensive line, I mean, it's been the strength of this team for a while. It's still great. The DBs looked a lot better. Tyreek Chappelle's a stud. The guys they brought in are pretty good. Bryce Anderson's also a stud. Torian York had a more of a rough game, but this isn't an AM podcast, so we won't break down how everyone played.
But do you think that this kind of performance is going to stutter them for next week?
No, they're going to dominate Florida. It doesn't matter. Florida's a joke.
Florida's
going to get dominated. A&M is still going to go. I can't think that 9-3. 9-3 is what A&M's going to go. I've been on the 10-2 train all off season, but 9-3. We're going to beat Texas. Sorry, A&M's going to beat Texas. I don't go to A&M.
Really?
You don't go to
A&M. A&M's going to beat Texas.
Well, I mean, we got
to
wait a whole season for that, but that's
going to
be really interesting. I think I know someone who might be a bum who's the quarterback of A&M.
I think Connor Wegman might be
a certified bum. That's a 31.8 QBR against Notre Dame. That's what that is. That was just an absolutely horrendous performance. My roommate on the couch next to me during that game was literally losing his mind. He spent the entire night finding Twitter posts hating Connor Wegman.
Your roommate's on the couch. Leave him on the couch. Connor Wigman's a stud. That, you know, top five baseball recruit in the country. Great athlete. We're going
to
say that.
Probably should have stuck to the diamond.
Hey. A&M is the best, far and away the best baseball team in the country. Not a baseball podcast. We're going to keep talking about.
That's true.
What I will say, I'll give Notre Dame their flowers. That offense is great. Riley Leonard is a...
How about that post-game interview, too? How can you not like Riley Leonard?
No, a great kid.
He's such a team guy.
So great kid. So
like,
sweet.
Really well, you know, like, PR trained.
Basically raised by Mike Elko.
It's hard.
Raised by Mike Elko. Mm-hmm. Mike Elko made him what he is.
And he literally just gave all the right answers.
No.
Like,
it's
hard
he said everything right.
You're an athlete?
Yeah. Especially after playing at Texas A&M for a full game. And he said it himself. It took him about three quarters to get going or to settle in.
That's a hard environment to play in. Mm-hmm. I'll give him that.
Yeah, I will
and
say.
And for them to go to that length and, like, just destroy that game, that's incredible. And it's really powerful to watch.
Notre Dame's
very
defense
exciting.
Is scary. I think.
The only thing is they have kind of a cupcake schedule for the rest of the year. Because they play mostly ACC teams who are just like bottom-tier ACC teams. Like, they're not even playing big schools like UNC or Miami.
Purdue's going to cause some damage.
Like, that's the thing, though. Like, because every year, like, Notre Dame tends to slip up against someone that they're not supposed to lose to, and that ruins their chance. But this year, like, we keep mentioning it every single time, because how can you not? 12-team playoff. You can lose a game or maybe even two games and still sneak your way in. And if you're Notre Dame... even more so, because they want the Irish in the playoff.
Everybody
wants the Irish in the playoff.
I'm going to give Notre Dame their flowers. That is the best defense in the country. Benjamin Morrison is miles better than Will Johnson. We're going
to
say that.
It's kind of hard to not love Notre Dame.
Purely based off each first game of the season, it's been a big debate for the last 2 years. You know, the same age, same class, play the same position. Who's the best defensive back in the country? Is it Will Johnson? Is it Benjamin Morrison? Based off their first games, Will Johnson had the pick six, was it? Or just the interception? But Benjamin Morrison looked far and away the better defensive back. Put Benjamin Morrison in that scheme with the other DBs opposite. I mean, they have two guys who could maybe be All-American cornerbacks. I mean, bookending and just incredible front seven. Wow.
I think there's a huge takeaway from this week, or from week one at least, and it's that it really does mean more in the SEC. I know A&M lost. I know LSU lost. And I know that Florida is the ugly
Florida
duckling.
Florida sucks. Can
Florida
we say that?
Is the ugly duckling of the SEC.
Yeah,
they are
the
only
brother.
Team that didn't show up for week one,
so
basically.
Here's the question.
Even Vanderbilt won.
Here's the question.
Vanderbilt beat Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
We're saying Florida sucks right now, and I really do think that they do. But they had Graham Mertz at quarterback, who I'm going to give myself flowers again. I said he sucked. He did suck. But
that's true.
They have DJ Lagwe they snatched out of A&M's backyard from,
is he a true freshman?
True freshman from Klein Kane. That's not right, but one of those high schools. Somewhere
and
in Klein. He's from Klein.
Yeah. Mm. Outside of Houston.
Just outside of Houston. Snatched him right out of UT and A&M. But he's a stud.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get the start this week because Graham Mertz is concussed. They play, you know, not a good team, but true freshman, get a little experience under his belt, maybe can show. I really hope Florida doesn't start Graham Mertz. I hate Graham Mertz. He's bad.
I think, aren't they already, like, talking about, there's already, like, rumors swirling that the true freshman is going to get a look, even in week two, which is insane.
So Graham Mertz is concussed, so he's not playing
this week. Right, yeah, he has a concussion.
But next week against A&M, I think it'd be pretty cool. You know, he plays his hometown team. Mm. But they've basically already come out and said that Graham Mertz is their starting quarterback. And
so
he's
once
gonna,
he's back, it'll,
and
like,
you know,
yeah,
the age old the age old adage, you don't lose your spot through injury, which is the biggest false. Ask Drew Bledsoe how true that is. But no, he's very good. I think the rest of the surrounding pieces on that Florida team are not good, so they're going to be a cellar dweller of the old SEC this year. Vandy won't be. I actually have written down here that Vandy's going to make a bowl game as my big, bold prediction to start the show.
I love it.
I love that.
I had
Vanderbilt. If we got to a Superdog last week, we ran out of time, but Vanderbilt was going to be my Superdog.
Mine was
and
BC.
I was so happy that
mine
they actually
BC,
won.
Mine was BC, so I'm very upset we didn't get to it, but yeah. I can show you my notes for
you
last
still got
week.
The receipts.
I have the receipts. I had BC as my Superdog because DJU is not good. But I think Vandy's going to make a bowl game, so that just goes back to Florida just being not good. The SEC, it means more. They looked really good.
Hear that one more time.
There is so many good stats from the SEC.
I love
week.
College football.
First of all, the most 60-point victories in a single day since the AP poll was created
There's
in
nothing
1936.
Better than FCS games,
Tennessee 69-3 over Chattanooga.
Nice.
Ole Miss 76-0 over Furman.
Boom.
Alabama 63-0 over Western Kentucky. And
Jaylen
Auburn 73-3 over Alabama A&M.
I
That's
love
That's four
FCS
60
games.
Plus point
That's
victories.
Insane.
And
that
yes,
is a
they're FCS
week
schools,
one.
But everybody else plays FCS, or mostly everybody else plays FCS schools week one. And they handled business.
They did. And it looked. And the other thing I will say is that in the out of the three games they lost, one looked really bad. Thank you, Florida. The other two, A&M offensively didn't look pretty, but they were in that game all the way with Notre Dame.
Oh, the defense kept them there
for
sure.
The defense looked great.
And they'll keep doing that all year.
Everything, my biggest concern with A&M is the receivers. They didn't get separation. How much of that is the quarterback not playing well? How much of the quarterback not playing well is the receivers not getting separation? I want to say a lot of that is that Notre Dame secondary, which I think is completely insane. And I think this game, people had instant reactions to it right after, saying A&M sucks. Since then, people have started saying this Notre Dame team is legit, and I think it's going to look even better a couple weeks from now when you see other quarterbacks who aren't, you know, Connor Wigman caliber, but, you know, Hudson Card, who just went 24 of 25 again for Purdue, you know, when he comes into town to play Notre Dame and he looks lost, and he looks like UT Hudson Card, I think this will age that A&M game even better. And then LSU, who lost, but that USC team, who are they going to be in the playoff? Maybe not, but they're going to be competitive.
They really showed
Tucker's
something.
Tucker's making a face over there.
They showed something. Like, I really didn't expect much at all from this USC team. I expect them to kind of look lost without their guy in Caleb Williams, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was expecting something a little bit similar, even possibly at LSU. But Nussmeier looked great.
Yeah, that's.
I got to say, Nussmeier looked really, really good. And I know LSU still lost, but and they were one of few teams in the SEC that did lose. But it's not a bad loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's a ranked loss. And it's a neutral site, so they didn't have the benefit of getting to play in Death Valley. But I think the offense was there. Nussmeier was making good decisions the whole game.
The defense looked a lot better.
It did. And the game was really close. This was probably this could have been the best game of the week if not for A&M Notre Dame.
And I mean, from the casual fans' viewing perspective and game enjoyment, I would say it probably was, because most people don't like to watch, you know, slugfest defenses just duke it out. So from a purely pleasurable viewing perspective, I think that LSU USC game was probably the game of the week.
Plus that setting was so cool.
Plus,
in Vegas, the end zones looked so nice.
Love Vegas, I know.
It was that was a really cool. I hope they keep doing that.
Yeah.
I know they called the game a classic, even though they haven't been doing it.
I love when they create something. It's like, this is a classic. Yeah, this
and
is
the
blank
just,
classic.
It's the first one. It's an inaugural classic.
It was a classic, though, to be fair.
The annual blank classic. This is the first time it's
Duke's
ever happened.
Mayo
How
classic,
is it classic?
Guys?
You don't know if this is ever getting brought back. What do you mean annual? It can't be annual. This is the first time you've done it.
Well, I think after a game like this, you're definitely bringing back the the Vegas Classic.
Yeah, whatever they call it. Yeah.
Also, there's like four kickoff classics, but there's no point in getting into that.
And how can
it
be a kickoff classic when it's after all
the
of the
game?
Other games?
Right.
And it's in the kickoff classic should be week zero.
And it's like a Thursday
night. A lot of games have kicked off before this kickoff classic. What naming people name stuff, and they like to name stuff. Mm-hmm. Fun. This has been a little bit of an eclectic start to the show, which I kind of love.
Yeah.
Kind of sums up the first weekend of college football pretty well.
Yeah, the first week is always crazy. Your eyes are always going all over the place. You're looking at 100 games,
yeah,
100 different people.
Five TVs.
Yeah.
And you're like...
All over the place.
Yeah.
What I will do before we go into this week's slate, I would just... One standout player, someone you think maybe won't win the Heisman, but you really liked what you saw, cool stat line, one cool play, anything. For me, that'd be Teteroa McMillan over at U of A. U of A is going to be sneaky good, and not sneaky good in the sense that everyone recognizes they're good. They're going to cause some havoc, maybe sneak into the playoffs.
And they're in the Big 12 now, right?
They are in the Big 12 now, and who knows what's going to happen in the Big 12?
That's
going to
be a rough one. I really think Utah's got it, but
a lot of people are saying Utah, a lot of people are saying OSU. I think U of A, I think I actually said that on the show last week, is that I think U of A is my dark horse for the Big 12.
Yeah.
I think that was my dark horse pick, and they came out and showed that they are a very good team. Teteroa McMillan is maybe the best receiver in the country, other than Kyron Lacy, who is a beast. And... Yeah, Teteroa McMillan. Noah Fifita throwing in the ball is a good enough quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Well-coached team. He's someone who I don't think is going to win the Heisman, but purely based off of his first game against an inferior opponent, he could have the best receiver season since Devontae Smith.
That's like the hardest part about making these calls after week one is just that because everybody played FCS opponents, or most teams played FCS opponents, and just like teams that are way worse than them outside of obviously A&M, Notre Dame, and like all the good games. But my guy from week one, standout performance is going to be Jackson Dart.
I had that too. Yeah, love that guy.
Coming back for another year at Ole Miss, and he started it out with a bang against Furman. 22 for 27 passing, 418 yards, 5 touchdowns, and no interceptions. Against an FCS school, still, but
against
that's
Furman.
A really, really good stat line.
It looked pretty.
It's a good-looking stat line.
He looks pretty, too.
And it's good-looking
guy.
It's a Heisman-level stat line, but the only issue with that is the consistency going to be there moving forward? And I really don't necessarily think it will. It'll be... tough sledding for sure because of Ole Miss's schedule in the SEC. They've got a non-conference road game against Wake Forest in 2 weeks, which won't necessarily be easy.
Won't necessarily be difficult either. I don't think Wake Forest is what,
I don't think they're all they chop themselves up
to be. It's not the Sam Hartman Wake Forest
anymore. It's not the same Wake Forest.
I think they might have a shot.
But it's still a road game. It'll be a solid road game to win. But then they also go on the road to South Carolina. They go to Death Valley to play LSU.
Good luck.
And they also go on the road to play Arkansas. They've got home games against Oklahoma and Georgia. And those are the even bigger games that they mm-hmm. I'm surprised they didn't wind up with an away game that was
I think
as
Georgia should have played every
those.
Single game on the road.
Yeah,
just to even the odds.
Or at least not have their neutral site be Atlanta. Why are they playing three neutral site games in Georgia per year?
I saw people arguing that it is actually a neutral site because Clemson's only 2 hours away. Shut up.
It's in Georgia.
They're in the same state.
There are
it's
Georgia fans all over the state.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh.
Put them on the other side of the country
That's
and then
such
call.
A stupid
put them
thing.
In the Vegas Classic that we were just talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to see them travel more than like.
I think to
what,
even playing
miles?
Field, they should have to play every single game on the road. Why not? They're so much better than everyone else.
And they'd probably still win out.
They probably still would. But back to your point, I mean, that's the great thing about week one Heisman predictions is literally you have no real information. They could have had one great game, but you get to get
the doors wide open,
too. Or just one great play.
Exactly. Just pick someone you thought, pick someone you want to shout out.
Yeah.
Had a good game on a good team. Who knows?
Yeah.
I'm going to pick Arch Manning's very first Texas Longhorns touchdown.
Nice.
That was cool.
That was electric. It was just great to watch. It was fun. He seems like a great guy to watch for the rest of his college career. I know he's not going to be starting anytime soon, but like Like, when he does, I feel like he's going to live up to that Manning name pretty easily.
I hope he sticks around at UT.
I hope he does.
It's going to be a really, really fun time
down
there.
I don't think any amount of money is going to make him walk away from UT.
No, I think
he lost his ID there. Like, he's a legend
that
there.
That was so funny. The flag in the crowd was awesome.
I think we need that in the studio right there. Our Schmanning's ID. Or you know what? Like, maybe we can, like, take a Fordham athlete's ID and hide it in here.
Get CJ Montez's ID.
Sure.
Oh, yes. Saw them doing walkthroughs today. They look like they hopefully will win a game this weekend, and it won't be as embarrassing as last week. Probably not. We're not here to talk Fordham football. We will not talk Fordham football until they prove that they deserve it. Because,
please be this weekend.
Anyways, what I will say, I have no idea how long we've been going on this, what was supposed to be a quick intro, but we will now get into...
This was just the intro?
We will now get into
in
our
week one.
We will now get into our
week two.
Into our week two slate. We'll start off with something that's going to take place in about an hour and 15 minutes here, our time when this is being recorded. Who knows what it probably definitely happened a long time ago when you were listening to this, but BYU versus SMU. Any hot takes, anything interesting? I'm a big Preston Stone guy. I think he's very good.
I agree.
I think
I like
SMU
Stone.
Could cause some havoc in the ACC. I kind of love that they're in the ACC as a Texas school.
I think SMU has a bit of an advantage under their already, just because they have an FBS win already under their belt this year. Meanwhile, BYU just had their FCS game last week.
But BYU's always an interesting team. Like, they're never
top
of the top in terms of, you know, and they talent or anything, but they win games.
And they completely handled their business against Southern Illinois. Like, it's hard to look at a team after they play an FCS school and make a prediction about them, but you can kind of tell. Like, if a team beats the brakes off of an FCS school, you know they're going to be, like, legit.
Their
offense is firing.
They're going to come into week two with their heads hot.
Exactly. And, like, on the flip side of that, if you're, like, a Colorado who walks out of a game with North Dakota State winning by less than a touchdown, like, you might be feeling a little more antsy going into next week. So for SMU and BYU, they're both coming off decent wins against FCS schools, so they're both going to have confidence coming into this game. I just think that SMU having that win already, it was a week zero win on the road against Nevada, and it was a comeback win too. Nevada actually got out in front of them first, and it was back and forth. I picked up the highlights actually yesterday. And really, just SMU looks like they know how to win games in the second half. Like, they know how to put their heads down, gather momentum, and really just make sure that you put a team to sleep in the late stages.
They're a very talented team who recruit very well for a very expensive private school.
Yeah,
and they utilize the fact that they're in one of the recruiting hotbeds in the country in that Dallas area very well. And they get kids to stay home quite consistently. And then they develop them, and they pay them a lot of money. Number one NIL fund in the nation.
A lot of money.
They're very
Tucker.
Happy about that NIL fund that they have.
I love that NIL fund. Nice and juicy.
Yeah. I mean, they're gonna create some noise in that ACC this year, and it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting for sure.
Yeah, especially because outside of Miami, with Clemson losing and with the Florida State basically
rough.
Out of the picture, the
right.
ACC is the wide
ACC
open. SMU
right.
could totally
it's
step in there.
It's all SMUs now.
I would definitely say Virginia Tech is a team I'm still not out on. I know they lost to Vandy. Kyren Drones is got injured. I don't know what the news is on that. I haven't been following it super closely, but if Kyren Drones is able to play 8 games this season, I do think he's missing this week. But Virginia Tech is a team that also could. I think the ACC winners might be 9-3, unless Miami, you know, plays like they did against Florida every week. I think a 9-3 ACC winner is not out of the question. Which also you could argue a 9-3 winner in the SEC isn't out of the question if someone sneaks into that SEC championship game and then beats Georgia. And they're in the playoff now because of the way that it's structured. The winner of the conference isn't necessarily the best team in the conference, so you know that's a weird thing, little wrinkle we can talk about more as we get closer. But
yeah.
The winner isn't necessarily the best team in the conference, and so the team, and depending on how the conference is, maybe the sole representative of the conference isn't the best team in the conference.
Yeah, we're probably, like, even with a 12-team playoff, we're probably still going to have a few teams that get left out and that are going to be really sour about being left out. And I think they'll be even more sour about it because there are more spots to be had.
Right. I mean, and that's fair. That's, like, a fair reaction. Like, you think you have it because there's 12 opportunities.
If you're an ACC team, you're, like, the third team in the ACC and you miss out because the rest of the ACC sucks, you're gonna be hot. You're
gonna come back for revenge in 2025.
You can also only play who you play, right? You get a certain amount of customization to your schedule.
Yeah.
Expecting teams to be good, and then when they end up not being good, you do what you're supposed to, and you miss out because the rest of them sucked. You know, that the 12-team playoff, as much as we like to say it, fix all college football's problems, if you're in
there's
that camp.
There's always going to be problems.
There's always going to be problems when you're a mostly subjective selection or objective selection of football of teams into a playoff.
When there's an invisible body of individuals who
when
get
there's
to
a
pick
committee,
and choose who
when
gets
a
in,
committee's in charge,
there's
money.
Always going to be someone who has a problem with the committee. Yeah. It's just like the Oscars
especially
and the Academy.
When,
someone always has a problem with like the invisible people behind
especially
the scenes
when
who
the
make
committee
all the decisions.
Is just made up of people who have reason to
favorites.
Poison the committee. Like, there's no reason that coaches or AD should be on the committee and be able to lobby for their team to get into the playoff. But
then again, like, who else?
That's why Fordham's
AD belongs on a college
football
committee.
That's why Ed Cole should be on the committee, because they have no shot of making it, but Ed Cole knows what he's talking about.
What if the committee was just
made up of,
like... I think
it should be all FCS athletic directors.
What if it was just AP? Like, what if the entire committee was just press? Kind of like the Baseball Hall of Fame works with the baseball writers.
That's true,
but then again, like, the writer's perspective, I feel like, isn't deep enough to understand...
Writers would just want all drama.
They would throw like a script college football together. They wouldn't throw who actually belongs. That's why you need like the coaches.
I think Nick Saban should just be in charge of football
people.
I think Nick Saban should just get to do whatever he wants.
It could be really fun.
They do call it the greatest show ever played.
Yeah.
So.
Now put some producers in there and some fun stuff.
I think we're just trying to get on the committee now.
Yeah.
I think we don't really know what's happening this week. I don't think we really know what's happening this week, but we're going to move into the biggest game of the weekend, or second biggest, depending on how you view a game we're going to talk about a little bit later. But Fox's Big Noon kickoff, Texas at Michigan at noon. The biggest game of the weekend is the noon kickoff.
Also game day this week in Ann Arbor.
Also game day in Ann Arbor.
In Ann Arbor.
Which, Big Noon kickoff, great concept. I don't think the best game of the weekend should be able to get Big Noon kickoff. Because the best game of the weekend should always be the night game, the primetime game.
Yeah, the 7:30 slot.
Let those kids tailgate. Let those kids get rowdy. Let the fans have fun.
You think they're not going to be lining up outside the stadium at 8 a.m. in Ann Arbor?
Oh, they definitely will be. But the thing is, if it's a night game, they're still going to be outside the stadium at 8 a.m.
That's true. It's just even more time.
They just give them the time.
It also lets the players
go out
afterwards.
Let them take a nap. Let them get back up. And they're rallying. You know, when they're still tired at 12, right? They went out the night before. Let the fans get all the time to recover. Let them start tailgating. Let them take a little bit of nap. Let them tailgate again. Let them get in the stadium, and they're going to be ready to go.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the actual game now.
Yeah, now time for the for the actual game. I really liked what I saw from Texas last week.
Me too.
I mean, how can you not like that?
It was kind of hard
to... they even bring Arch Manning in.
Yeah, they brought Arch Manning in. It was like a full freshman kind of slate.
He got
there,
a solid four or five drives in.
Yeah.
I mean, they dominated competition they were supposed
against
to.
And against Colorado
this is
State,
hard for you to
too.
Talk about how great Texas is.
Well, no, I have no issue talking about how great Texas is. I just don't think Texas is that great, mostly because I don't think Sark is that great.
But it's not. It's about the players at the same time.
To an extent.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can
tell. To, yeah,
really
to a significant
extent,
I would say.
But, you know, Quinn Ewers is a great player. That's like not really that debatable. He's a great player. Arch Manning's a great player.
And how about Alabama transfer Isaiah Bond?
How about
getting
it?
Things done? He's, like, come on. And he was a dog at Alabama, but he's that guy at Texas, and he looks great.
The talent
doing
is there.
It.
However, it was Colorado State.
Who aren't even, like, they're not even they're, that terrible. Like, Colorado State's an FBS program.
Yeah, it's an FBS. We didn't play an
FCS.
That's
a much more significant win,
I think. It's a significantly depleted Colorado State from last year. It's not the same Colorado State team that beat Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that while you can give UT its props, and it is UT, I will refuse to call Tennessee UT. It's not. Texas is UT. As much as I despise Texas, they are UT. Because Texas is better at everything, and Texas gets first call. I don't care if Tennessee was a university first. They actually weren't, anyways.
That's fine. I like calling them the Vols anyway.
Yeah, well, yeah. I prefer not to talk about Tennessee because they beat A&M in the national championship like, for baseball.
What's, like, the validity in Tennessee?
Hates
like
Tennessee. Texas, I like Tennessee, personally.
The roster talent for Texas is undeniable.
It's really good.
I think they're a little bit overrated because people are saying that they're going to come in and challenge for the SEC title.
Well, they are.
I think they're significantly underestimating the difference between a Big 12 defense and an SEC defense, right? A middle-of-the-pack SEC team will take A&M because they're not one of the top dogs in the SEC. They're a middle-of-the-pack SEC team with an elite defense, right? So Texas, top-of-the-line team, right? They're national title contenders. Going into an average SEC school thinking we're going to run them, it's not the same as going into, we'll take Baylor, for example, in which you can just light up the scoreboard, right? An average SEC team is, they're going to play hard defense. Almost every defense in the SEC is a great defense, or at least has some great quality about their defense, except
for
Florida.
It's the SEC.
Florida looked horrible.
It's the SEC except Florida.
Exactly. It's the Southeast Conference.
Southeast.
You just send Florida to the ACC to just go bum around
with
everybody
the other
else.
Wait,
like,
just
yeah, like
go.
Take Florida State out as
Florida,
a college
Florida
at all,
State.
And then just put in Florida as one.
You can't do the Knolls like that. Come on now.
Throw Florida into the Gulf. Just get them out of here.
Just, you know what? You know what? All
Miami,
Florida. Just go off.
Honestly,
just
Miami
bye.
Can go too. They can.
They won the last pre-CFP national championship. Cool. I mean, come on.
10 years
Jameis
ago.
Winston.
Ooh, love Jameis. Big Saints fan. Love Jameis.
Jameis Winston is just a great. He's
a character.
I mean,
the guy played like 95% of his
football
career.
This is a college football show.
Exactly.
What are we doing?
Jameis Winston, one of the greatest college football quarterbacks of all time.
That is true.
Played his entire college career not being able to see. Got LASIK and then hasn't really played since he got LASIK. So we don't know. He could be Aaron Rodgers.
That's true.
We don't know.
Maybe he just needs an ayahuasca retreat.
This
it's
Michigan
like one
team,
retreat
though.
Away.
This Michigan team, though.
Yeah.
Without
not
their head coach.
Not the same team as last year.
Right.
I thought Alex Orji was going to be the quarterback coming into the season. He's not. He's not the starter. A lot of question marks around that offense in terms of snap counts. A lot of guys that people thought were going to be starters or at least heavy contributors didn't play as much. Colston Loveland only had 45 offensive snaps when he's probably your best offensive player. I know he's a tight end, so there's some sets you don't run him in. You know, some four wide type things, you know, some quicker spread type options. But your best offensive player, which he is definitely their best offensive player now because we just saw Donovan Edwards look horrible. He averaged like 2 yards a carry or something like that, maybe less.
Yeah, right. And really surprising too against a team like Fresno State.
Exactly. The offensive
like
line
had a hard time getting going.
Like the offensive line did not look good. The running game didn't look good.
I'm not even sure how much of that is on Cherone Moore, though, because that just seems like a kind of like a lack of preparation thing.
I think the talent isn't there. It's not it's Michigan, so the talent obviously exists,
and the money's there.
I don't think
it's definitely not the Michigan. They're not the national champions.
It's a younger team.
This is not the same
team.
Not even close.
It's been for the last couple of years. Definitely a younger team, diminished by the draft. They lost their coach, who was arguably the best coach in college football. Outside of Nick Saban, and you know, first time head coach.
Also gone.
Yep, first time head coach with a new quarterback, a lot of new players.
It's just a rebuild year.
I think the mindset is right though, because I'm watching Cherone Moore's interviews. Like this Michigan team is taking this matchup with Texas to be like they're taking it as a real challenge. Like this is their. Like make or break game where it's like, are we going to have a solid season or is this going to be the rebuild year?
Are we
going to
go 8-4 or are we going to make the playoff type of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Along those lines.
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, but I really don't like, I like the mentality, but I don't think it's enough.
No,
and for all the reasons that we've just laid out, I think Texas is going to manhandle Michigan in the big house.
This is not the challenge that is going to prove whether I'm right or whether y'all are right on who Texas is as a team. I think Texas is going to walk in there. This is a good test for Texas in terms of playing on the road in the biggest stadium in the country.
Yeah, in a really hard stadium.
I will say Texas is going through the ringer this year in terms of who they play and where they play. A lot of their hardest games are on the road.
And, you know, it's a testament to who they are. It's going to show.
It will show. Yeah. I think Quinn Ewers is a very good leader. I think Sark is not a good leader. I don't think he's a good coach either. Or at least he's not a national title level coach. And so I think that'll get exposed, but I don't know if that gets exposed until late. And so they might, you know, get in the playoff.
Yeah,
and
they might make one of the 12.
I think there's a good shot they make the 12. I don't think that they make it further, that they go all the way. Top five team in the country that's going to be fighting for the national title game. But this Michigan game is not one that I think they'll struggle with. I think, you know, you could see.
I think they see it as an open opportunity without their head coach, without the starting quarterback. Like, it's all like just laid out in front of them, and they're just going to take it.
The spread's about 8, I think, right now. I don't think 14's out of the question. I think a 3-score, 17-21 point lead is very realistic. I think it'll be more likely around the 10-14 points in terms of the score and the difference. Michigan's going to put up a good fight. I think it'll look a lot like the Georgia-Clemson first half. Really, the whole game. It'll be closer than that. But
this has Georgia-Clemson feeling to it.
It'll be
I'm just looking at it on my screen.
I can't wait. I can't wait until UT wins this game and everyone's like, oh my God, they're the number one team in the country. We're going to – oh, Texas is back.
That is what
– they're going to get so overrated and then they'll lose in like week 7.
It's going to be exactly that.
That's what's going to happen.
They're going to get the hopes up and then they're going to be shot down.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's how college football works. Let's be
honest. I think around the board, we all think Texas will win this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's maybe not as big of a game as it's looking, you know, the number.
The rankings are misleading for how good of a game this would be.
You're right. But it'll be fun to watch at times.
It'll be a cool noon game.
I think the first quarter and the fourth quarter won't be great. That meet when it's close, you know, when it's all the scoring's going to happen in that second and third quarter. And we're probably going to see 30 points scored in those two quarters and 0 points in the other, and it'll be like 17-3 or something. But
who knows? Maybe it gets bad enough we see Arch Manning again.
Oh,
that would be crazy, right? Could you imagine if it's that bad that we see Arch Manning in the Michigan game?
If it's like 14, if it's like 30-16,
he's going out.
I don't know.
I think they're going to get Arch Manning.
Okay, yeah, that's like a 2-score lead. I think they probably
give him a lot. I think they'll put him in.
They're going to give Arch Manning as many snaps as they possibly can this year. Whether it's a close game or not, for a multitude of reasons, they want to keep him. They want to show that you're our guy.
I think if they're within 10 points, though, it's not happening. If it's a 10-point lead, I don't think you go to Arch Manning.
I think it has to be a full 2-score.
You need a full 2-touchdown lead.
And he has to go in the second half.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. Because you like just like keep the first half like consistent with the planning and everything.
Like, if it's like 14-3 in the first half,
you could pivot at halftime.
And UT gets the ball with like a minute left. Maybe let Arch Manning run a 2-minute drill because there's not a whole lot of impact there.
Yeah,
and you see what happens. You know, there's spots to put him in. Maybe Quinn Ewers just gets hurt. I hate to say that. Or minor knock.
That's the thing, though, because like even if he was to like say he misses like a couple of plays or something, or his like helmet pops off,
minor injury, they're gonna play it safe.
Arch Manning is not a bad quarterback to have in for like a play or two.
Yeah, but what I'm saying there is that, you know, if Quinn Ewers gets the wind knocked out of him, or you know, a minor knock, they're gonna be like, don't bother playing through it, right? Come sit on the sideline for 3-4 plays.
Exactly.
You're the starting quarterback. Arch Manning's not going to take over the job this year. You're gone after this year anyways.
But if you have the depth, why not use it?
Exactly. So they're going to play it super safe because they do not want Quinn Ewers to get hurt for the long term. So everything's going to be safe. And I think Arch Manning probably plays 8 to 10 to 15 snaps every game this year. It's kind of a...
At minimum.
I'm excited for that.
Which I think will be a bolder, more interesting little... storyline to follow is how much does Arch Manning play, because I think they're going to force feed him as many snaps as they possibly can. Moving on to another noon game, which both Tucker and I think could be better, Georgia Tech at Syracuse at noon. The Georgia Tech team, former A&M quarterback Haynes King versus former Ohio State quarterback Kyle McCord, with former A&M players littered all over that Syracuse team.
And you see what state they liked better.
And the Syracuse Aggies.
The Syracuse
Aggies.
Yes, this is a game I think is going to be really good. I think Syracuse could be interesting in that ACC as well, just because of how much talent they brought in the transfer portal. It's a whole new Syracuse team that really has a large amount of talent for the first time in a while, in that it's a Syracuse team where them upsetting, you know, the top dogs wouldn't be necessarily that big of a surprise, and they're going to be not favorites in a lot of games, maybe necessarily, but the spreads won't be as big, and it'll be, you know, single score games, single score spreads for almost all of their games. And this Georgia Tech game is a big test, I think, because both of these teams, I think it's a non-conference game, actually.
No, it's conference.
Is
ACC.
It conference?
Yep.
Yeah.
ACC.
Syracuse is ACC.
Well, I know that, but week two games, you have some weird things where they play in conference games, but they don't actually count for conference games. Like,
does that actually happen?
It does happen.
I thought if you ever play a conference game, it
no,
winds
no,
up
no.
Counting.
It's one of the games this week, actually. Baylor Utah.
Doesn't count as a conference.
It's not
game?
A conference game. No. Part of the reason is because Utah.
Because Utah
it was
just
scheduled because they just joined. But
sometimes.
You'll play a conference game as a non-conference game because just you play like seven conference games, and so
it sets the seven conference games in the schedule
sets,
as the ones that count, and
yeah.
then like
and
that
then,
extra game is agreed upon by the two schools, like yeah, hey, we're gonna play each other, but that
yeah.
it's not gonna
it
count
mean,
for the
yeah,
standings.
And a lot of it's because of
okay.
realignment and how things have been set. You know,
yeah, I'm sure actually that's happening
set, like,
a lot
10 years
probably
in advance.
Yeah,
so then things get moved around or. Coaches leave and they don't want to play, or
it wouldn't be fair to everybody else because, mm-hmm. like
or
say
you
for Baylor Utah,
to a home or something, and
Baylor Utah
shifted,
probably gives
so
Baylor
moved,
and Utah
yep.
an extra game in conference if it counts as a conference game. So for the sake mm-hmm. of having it be equal for everybody and everybody plays mm-hmm. the same number of conference games, they're just not counting it, yeah. and that makes perfect sense.
So, but this is an actual ACC game.
To that extent, it is, because Syracuse and Georgia Tech have both been in the
yeah,
ACC for
okay,
years.
So it's
just being on the schedule.
I'm not
yeah.
used
it's
to,
definitely an ACC game.
I'm not used to conference games being week
well,
two.
Georgia Tech,
like
Florida
that.
State
that
in week
crazy.
Zero counted as a conference game.
It did. See, I hate the way that ACC does that. Conference games should not be played the first 2-3 weeks of the season.
Florida State is 0-2 in the ACC. That's why Florida State
Florida
is so cooked.
State sucks.
Because they started against
yeah.
Georgia Tech and then played Boston College. They lost both those games, mm-hmm. so they're already in a two-game hole, or I guess a one-game hole against
conference.
Georgia Tech, but they're in a two-game hole in the
yeah.
conference. They're basically a non-factor for the conference
cut
now.
Cut Florida off. Bye.
Yikes.
But this Georgia Tech team, very talented. We saw a little bit of that last year with Haynes King having a resurgent year. This year, he looks even better. The guy, very fast, very athletic. He's bulked up a little bit. Less of an injury risk. He throws the ball very weird. It's very ugly and hard to watch. But it works. And they win games. And Kyle McCord, you could say, is the same. He throws the ball a little weird. It's a little bit ugly to watch. He's won games. All he's done is win his entire career, even though he was forced out of Ohio State, and mm-hmm. everyone's like, he sucks, because they lost one game. But he's a winner. Haynes King has proven that he's been able to take this Georgia Tech team and win games with them. This will be the best game of the day, or of the day slates.
Of the noon schedule? Yeah.
I think of the noon and
3:30.
The only other game I could see being in that afternoon slot would be the Iowa State Iowa,
the rivalry game.
That one should be
rivalry
really good.
Game,
it's
but there's never
the
been
thing, like,
there's never been an Iowa game where I say I want to watch that.
Right.
And I think that doesn't change. I probably won't watch that game because Iowa is just hideous to watch. Ferentz is back on the sideline, so they'll probably score 4 points. Don't ask me how they're scoring 4 points. It's gonna happen. They do weird things. They get safeties. The defense is great. The offense is horrible.
They're a bit better this year.
Well, that's because they didn't have Ferentz on the sideline. Kirk Ferentz was not on the sideline for game one, and the offense looked good.
Ooh.
Kirk Ferentz is back on the sideline this week. The offense is going to look terrible. Book
right,
it.
So,
they're scoring 8 points.
I mean, put Iowa on watch. But regardless, just to touch on Syracuse one last time, they have a single out for winning against Georgia Tech this week, and I think it's going to be Kyle McCord.
I think
it's going to be how he plays. Week one, he goes 27-39, 354 yards. Pretty solid day. 4-1. Touchdown interception ratio
yeah.
is very nice. And if he continues to play like that, he should have no problem taking the top off of Georgia Tech's defense. But I think the the issue for Syracuse is going to be that their run defense is not great.
It is not.
They coughed up 262 yards in week one and two touchdowns on the ground against Ohio. That's Ohio, not Ohio State, Ohio. Oh,
what I do love about
the green logo.
The pass rush is very much improved. I'm not going to say good, but improved. With you brought in a great player in Fadil Diggs, who plays both the run and the pass very well. And what I'd be interested to see is how much they use him as a QB spy this week to try and contain Haynes King. Because if you can stop Haynes King in the run game, you can stop him in the pass game, because he's not an overly intimidating passer. The reason his passing game is so intimidating is because of the threat of his legs and the way that he plays that off. Because his arm is not super strong, but he's accurate, and he throws on the run very well. And so if Syracuse can stop, keep Haynes King in the pocket and make him throw the ball, that's what I would like to see. So maybe they won't stop the running game, but if they stop the quarterback running game, it could force, because the quarterback run game is such a big part of Georgia Tech's offense, it could, you said Kyle McCord, I think them stopping Haynes King from running is the key to this game. Also, the key for their season, Kyle McCord proving he's an Ohio State caliber quarterback.
Yeah. I would agree with that. So far, it would suggest he still is. But again,
I think you could argue
it was Ohio.
He didn't do anything last year to prove he wasn't an Ohio State level quarterback. He had them in a position to make the playoff. They just lost to the eventual national champions, and they didn't get in.
And who doesn't want to lose to the champion? Like, it's one thing to lose to somebody who else got.
I think Ohio State would rather lose to, like, Florida than they
under normal circumstances. I don't like. I know, it's unrelated, but when the Yankees get bounced from the playoffs, I like it when that team wins, when the team that bounced them wins the World Series. Right. It always feels better that way.
But
I think when it's Ohio State and when it's they're losing to Michigan,
yeah.
I think it's
it
even
hurts.
Worse.
It hurts.
As we're running a little bit short on time because we've had a very awesome episode, we're going to talk about the biggest game, one I'm very excited for.
You mean at 7:30?
At 7:30, Colorado at Nebraska. Shedeur Sanders versus the true freshman, Dylan Raiola. The former Georgia commit, Dylan Raiola, versus the former FAU commit, Shedeur Sanders.
Former Jacksonville State.
Jackson, Mississippi. Although, I guess Jacksonville's also in Mississippi. But,
yeah.
So
Jackson State.
Jackson State, yeah. Nebraska is a team that I think a lot of people are sleeping on. I know they're the favorite in this game. I know Colorado's the underdog. But as we've seen since Deion got there, Vegas might think that they're the underdog. Everyone else thinks that Colorado's the favorite in every game they play for some reason. As we talked a little bit last week, Deion is a great man manager. He gets his kids ready to play the game for the most part. He gets his kids really bought in. He puts his kids in places to succeed. So when I say this, I don't want anyone to think I'm hating on Deion. He does not put his kids in the best position to win on the field, in that his clock management is quite poor. He often gets a little bit too Shedeur happy, in that he lets Shedeur do what he wants. He lets Shedeur run the two-minute drill, which, I'm sorry, no matter how advanced you are as a college quarterback, you should not be running the two-minute drill. You're a 20-something-year-old kid. You just don't have enough experience. You're not Tom Brady. You're not Peyton Manning. You're not the GOAT Drew Brees. You shouldn't be running the two-minute drill. He allows Shiloh to just do whatever he wants on defense, and he'll just – Shiloh is a menace. That dude will late hit the heck out of someone. You could be 40 yards out of bounds, and Shiloh Sanders will come flying in like a cruise missile and spear you.
Head on a swivel.
I haven't even suited up for this game. Why is Shiloh hitting me? I don't know what's happening.
I'm just throwing
the ball back to the referee. Where did he come from?
Yeah, he's
and
he's
it's
chomping
not
at the
just
bit.
His sons. His whole defense is quite undisciplined, I will say. Travis Hunter is...
I mean, that's what tends to happen when you get a bunch of guys juiced up and like ready to fly around the field and knock some heads. Like, things tend to fall apart in terms of like the I suppose, like, the composure.
You can have your guys ready to play and still be disciplined. I mean, that Alabama team for the last 20 years, the Georgia team now, have the same caliber, well, probably better caliber of athlete with the same, you know, they're all from the same place. These guys all get recruited from that same, you know, the Georgia pool, the Texas pool, the California pool. They all played each other growing up. So there's no reason that they're any less undisciplined, especially when Deion puts his kids off the field in such a great position to succeed in life, and he emphasizes discipline and all of that in all other aspects of life. Why are they so undisciplined on the football field? I don't get it. He's such an awesome person, and he preaches discipline, and they succeed so well off the field. Why aren't they disciplined on the field? If all you preach is discipline, how is a team not disciplined? It doesn't make any sense to me.
It seems odd that it doesn't translate, but like I suppose that might be like the difference between Deion Sanders and primetime, you know, or the difference between, in this case, Deion Sanders and Coach Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Like Deion Sanders is the man who like he turns kids into men in college and like basically like teaches you how to live your life while you're playing football for him.
The discipline guy.
But then Coach Prime is pretty much prime time, but throw a headset on him. Prime time with a headset. So I think it could come a little bit from that. But also it shouldn't take away from Colorado's ability to fly around the field and play hard. They just need to do it, like you said, without taking the penalties. Like, just stay a little more disciplined and know how to release your energy in a way that doesn't wind up with laundry on the field.
They look so great. They'll go on a 75-yard drive, have the ball for like 5 minutes of game time, and then get like back-to-back unsportsmanlike conducts and then throw in a holding, and all of a sudden they're back at like the 40-yard line from the 10, and it's like, what just happened? How did this happen? Or they get a 30-yard catch, and someone's fighting in the background, or someone's holding, and it's like, just keep the composure for just a second. This team is too talented to allow penalties to beat them. And it's something you saw a little bit in an odd way with recent Alabama teams, is they were also very undisciplined, and I think that's part of the reason Saban retired, is he just couldn't really adapt to the changes of his team. He's a very much a guy who's going to get you, and he's going to have you for 3 years, and he's going to whip you into shape. And if you're not in shape, you're not.
You're doing it his way.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then with that portal, he's like, this guy is a guy who I love. I think he's going to a great person. I think he's a great kid. He's just not there yet, but I have to play him or he's going to leave.
Yeah. Or bring in a kid who has like 2 years of experience in a different program where they just do things differently. And it's going to be hard to kind of pivot
rip him into that kind of
Yeah, it's going to be hard both for the player to pivot into a new system, but also for Saban to fit him into the system. Because if you get someone in the transfer portal, you're basically trying to force them into the system. If it doesn't work, that's an entire scholarship that you just threw away in the transfer portal for someone who doesn't fit in your system. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
What I will say, though, is the defense did look significantly improved from last year. The other thing is, though, they played Nebraska last year. They handled business. This year, it's a significantly improved Nebraska team with a great coach.
And it was at Colorado last year, right?
It was in Colorado
last year.
So now they're
going to Nebraska.
They're going into Nebraska. Nebraska didn't have a quarterback last year.
And that's a sleeper hard place to play, too. Those school, like Wisconsin, too. Like, Wisconsin
and Nebraska are
two very difficult places to
play. Nebraska
is
waiting to emerge as the powerhouse that they were in the 90s. And they want to be that team again. They just need someone to root for. And when you have baby Patrick Mahomes, and I don't know if y'all have watched the side-by-side comparisons, and just them standing there, they stand the same. They're the same person. The way they throw, they train together, so it's obvious, but they're
That's
built
really
the same. Like, they put the pads on. They both have the little bit of a weird body type shape. They both run the same. They both kind of waddle a little bit. They both throw the ball sidearm. It's the same person. And
this is Patrick Mahomes.
It's almost impressive how close it is, because not only does he have the same mannerisms, he makes similar outstanding plays, and he has such a swagger about him for a true freshman that it almost doesn't make sense. And he's a guy that he's gonna be very good next year, But I think he's a guy who can be very good this year and put Nebraska, you know, kind of finally take this Matt Rhule era Nebraska and make them into what they were always meant to be. Shout out Will Compton. That guy's awesome. He's going to take this Nebraska team, and I think Dylan Royal is the answer. You know, he was a Georgia commit, didn't like Georgia. He went to Nebraska because he thought he could make something at Nebraska, and this could be the game that puts Nebraska back on people's radar as a team to look out for, as a team that could be a national powerhouse.
I think what I'm hearing is that this kid's a little Mahomey.
He is a little. He's a lot of Mahomey. He's real Mahomey.
Regardless, outside of this Colorado-Nebraska game in the late slate, and it is a good game, there's one other game I want to mention, if we can get it in.
Let's go ahead.
Tennessee at NC State at 7:30 on ESPN. It's a ranked versus ranked matchup. I think it's the only other ranked versus ranked this week other than Texas-Michigan.
I think you're correct.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yes.
I really liked what I saw from Ayamaleva week one.
He's a stud too, yeah.
And I think he's going to – he gets a really good chance to show his stuff here. Like, obviously, last week was Chattanooga, so not you're not really doing much there. But against NC State, this would be a much more high-profile win, especially on the road, when NC State is one of the teams that's going to compete for the top of the ACC now. So if Tennessee wins this game, this win is going to look better and better as the season goes on for NC State. It's going to be a tough game because they are going on the road. But I think this is going to be the second week in a row where the home team in primetime loses.
I think you're right.
I think you're right.
That was an unnecessary shot. People were ready after last week to crown Nico Ayamaleva as the best quarterback in the country. And so if he now goes out and beats a ranked team on the road as a freshman, the hype and the clamor is going to just...
He's going to turn legit.
They're going to 10X it. They're going to 10X it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he looked very good, and I'm very excited to watch him against a ranked opponent. I think there's a chance. Now, they're not going to blow him out like they did last week. I think there's a chance they could make him look very similar. They could be very similar-looking games from Chattanooga to this game in that Tennessee has a great offense. Josh Heupel's a very good
They'd be hard-pressed to reproduce their performance against Chattanooga.
They put up
more than 700 yards of offense.
They're not going to do that, but 400, 500 yards, I think, is in the cards.
That would be a really, really nice night. I'm thinking somewhere in the realm of, like, 400, maybe even, like, a mid-300 yards. I still do think that Tennessee will win probably handedly.
NC State is the only thing, but I think
yeah,
right.
It's hard to be high on any ACC school.
They make it so hard, don't they? Yeah, they do their best.
I'll give NC State a win condition, and it's wide receiver Kevin Concepcion.
That guy, yep.
That's a talented kid right there. Week one, he had 9 receptions for 121 yards and 3 tutties. That's a solid performance. And if he keeps putting up numbers like that, we could have a wide receiver in the Heisman conversation, even.
Tetsuro McMillan. Who actually, fun stat, is they showed on the broadcast, is Tetsuro McMillan's stat line, the last person to do it was Kevin Concepcion. Which
is now, two-horse
cool,
race.
Little cool thing to see. But he is very good. I just don't think the talent is there to compete with this Tennessee team. I think the quarterback matchup is just completely...
SEC superiority.
Yeah.
Give me the Vols.
And the ACC just makes it so hard to root for them. That will conclude our weekly slate breakdown. Before we get out of here, though, we do want to do a segment we're really hyped up for. We really wanted to get to it last week so that I could predict BC to upset FSU. We didn't quite get to it. We're going to get to it this week. Tucker and I actually came in and had the same pick. I changed mine, so I'll let Tucker start us off.
All right. First week of College Gridiron Superdogs. Here we go. My Superdog this week is going to be the Tulane Green Wave, +9.5 versus ranked Kansas State this week, but it is a home game, so they have that to their credit. It's a 10-point dog at home, I think this is kind of a no-brainer. And I also think that Tulane could very well win this game outright. They could totally flip the script here and just beat Kansas State.
A habit of beating teams that they have no business being in games with. So.
Kansas State gave up fewer total yards and fewer yards per play in Tulane than week one defensively, so I'll give them credit for that. But it was two FCS opponents for Tulane and KSU. KSU's run defense was particularly dominant. They gave up 36 yards on 38 carries.
That's beautiful.
So that's less than a yard average per play.
That's kind of insane.
That their defense gave up. But I think Tulane's offense is well prepared for a defensive attack on the run like KSU has, because they don't lean on the run as hard. They can kind of shift either way, go more towards the passing game or more towards the run game, depending on what's working on a specific day. And I think redshirt freshman Darian Mensa had a very solid first career start. He went 10 for 12. That's not that many passes, but it's efficient, which is probably it's the good thing to look at here. And for 205 yards on only 10 completions. That's really nice.
You like to see that.
And he threw for two touchdowns. So, again, not an incredible start, but for his first college start as a redshirt freshman, I think it was really good. And I think going into a home game against Kansas State, Tulane will win outright. I'll call that right now. Tulane's going to win outright. They're a super dog, so I think I get a point if they cover, but I think it should be like 2 points or something if they win outright, and I'm going to call that they win outright right now.
I like that. I mean, there's a reason we both walked in here and had them, and because it seems like they're just not getting respected. My super dog is going to be Mississippi State at Arizona State. +5.5. I have Mississippi State winning that outright as well. Not just because they're an SEC school. It's just people are very high on Arizona State this year. People think they're going to be quite good. I don't see the talent on that roster. I don't see the talent at quarterback. Mississippi State has I'm not going to say proven, but a very experienced quarterback in Blake Shapen, who transferred in from Baylor. They have a new scheme this year, off the back of quite a horrible year last year. They lost Will Rogers, their all-time leading passer, the best quarterback in the school's history. But they brought in Blake Shapen. They are looking to very much turn around the narrative of that program. They don't want to look like Florida. You know, they don't want to be one of the bottom teams in the SEC. And so I think this is a case of of Mississippi State going in and saying, hey, SEC superiority is a real thing. Arizona State
just means more.
It just means more. As much as I hate to keep saying it, and you know, I hate to harp on saying teams are being overhyped, but I think Arizona State very much can buy into that being overhyped, and it's a team that people are very high on this year. And so, you know, in week 2 they have a good test. They're at home for this, but I think Mississippi State goes on the road and takes the win +8.5.
You just convinced me to do Tulane.
You got Tulane?
Oh, yeah?
I got Tulane.
Nice.
I mean, you like what you just said about the money line and the whole stat line, mm-hmm. It definitely convinced me. I think that this team is going to walk away with a win, and I think it's not going to be a really hard test for them to do.
Could even sneak them into the ranking, too.
Getting a win over
number 17. They could sneak in at, like, 25 next week just to give them a look.
And you know
I always
what?
Like when teams have freshman quarterbacks. It's so cool.
Yeah. Give him a chance.
Redshirt or true.
Yeah.
Well, those are our dogs. We got Tulane plus, what did you have them at, 9.5?
Yeah, I had them at 9.5. I think that was from ESPN and MGM.
Okay.
I found, like, two sites that had the same line, so I just locked in on that.
So we got Tulane plus 9.5 and Mississippi State plus 8.5 are our super dogs for the week. We think both will win outright. Definitely to cover, though. That will be all from us here on this week 2 episode of College Gridiron. I am Barrett Spreitzer along with Isabella Terracini and Tucker Austin. In the booth, we had Griffin Stevenson hanging with us for this very long episode. We appreciate that. Have a great weekend. Let's enjoy some football. Make good decisions. Peace.